You're listening to Red Setter, your roundup of Red Camera news from the crew at fxguide.com.
Hi, and welcome to this special edition of Red Center, coming to you across the Pacific. Well, it's sort of like a global Red Center. Jason, how are you?
Good morning, Mike. I'm well.
It is good morning, but it's pretty early in the morning for you, or is it late at night? I can't quite work out which.
I'm ready for bed. I just watched, I think the Australians trashing the Serbians in their first Olympic event, some soccer. It's 22:12 at night.
Right. And I'm at I'm literally early in the morning and just about to have my first latte. So we're going to keep it brief. I'm in Chicago. I'm going to be heading over to San Francisco in about an hour. But we wanted to make sure we got a Red Center out to you guys. So it's a bunch of interesting stuff to discuss.
So yeah, plenty. Plenty happening.
What's happening in our news, first of all? Let me give a quick, before I do even that, I should give a quick praise to what we're going to do today. We're going to have an interesting interview that you've got lined up later in the episode, haven't we?
Yes, I'm speaking to Michael Scott, who most people probably would know as Dorkman from Ryan vs. Dorkman, the Star Wars fan films.
Yes,
because he's now, since those films, he's a Red owner. So, yeah, good to catch up with him.
Yes, he's really progressed from being an internet celebrity to a filmmaker. And I know Michael, he's a good guy. We're also going to be discussing LUTs and workflows following a shoot that I did recently with Ben Allen in Sydney. But before that, we're going to quickly do the news. And as I said, it'll be a shorter episode than normal this week. So, Jason, what's happening news-wise?
Okay, re-gear and schedule, that's all pretty much the same, so I won't really go over that. There is a couple of other interesting news, bits of news. The build 16 went to final release build, which I guess will mean that my next sort of shoots, I've got three, for some reason, got three red shoots coming up now in the next couple of weeks. So hopefully, because I'm obviously only using rental cameras, I'll get to shoot build 16 and see what all the fuss is about. So yeah, that's great, that's out there, and the SDK has been released finally, which is reasonably huge news, I think, Mike.
Look, I think it's great news. I mean, obviously what people want to see is what people do with the SDK. For the average Red user, it's more the fact that it's happening than them actually using it themselves, though you can actually register for the SDK, can't you?
Yeah, that's right. You can go down, register it, and I guess download it. So theoretically, soon we'll probably start to see, probably sooner rather than later, start to see some fruits of from all of that.
Yes.
What do you think it's really going to mean to everybody?
Oh, I think it's going to mean a huge thing. I mean, starting with Adobe, which is going to be the first, I say probably first because I actually know of several manufacturers that are on that, but I just don't know how far advanced they are. But we expect that Adobe will be one of the first to come out. And I think that'll ease up workflow concerns and certainly mean that a wider audience will feel comfortable in doing the post-production. So that's all a good thing, I think.
Yeah, okay. R3D files, well, this is, I mean, I don't know whether this is actually released or what's certainly announced that it's going to, I think it was going to be within a week or so, pretty shortly, R3D files will open natively in CS3, Premiere Pro, and After Effects.
Yes, yes. And I mean, that really will make it pretty useful, but I guess the one that most people would be hanging out for, certainly many of our listeners would be to see it really appearing in Avid and also with Autodesk with Flame, Smoke and alike.
That's pretty wild, yeah.
Yeah, that's obviously going to be happening and we'll bring you news of that as it comes out. And let me move on and ask you another question. There's apparently going to be a ranch in Vegas. What's that about?
Yes, I just read that a couple of days ago. Yes, the official from Jim is Red Digital Cinema has chosen Las Vegas to build the new Red Ranch headquarters, located about 10 minutes from McCarran International.
Well, everything's about 10 minutes from,
I suppose so.
From McCarran International.
And the Vegas Strip at the base of the hills. So support their design, engineering, manufacturing, sales, service, and operations. And
so
they're going to have a sound stage, restaurant, town center, and limited housing on an 80-acre site. It sounds like a joke, but I'm sure they're not joking.
Yeah, well, of course, the actual current Red headquarters is effectively in the warehouse of an Oakley Sunglasses kind of side part down in Orange County. And while it's a very nice warehouse, it's not exactly a custom-built facility. So,
no, if you're imagining them getting, I don't quite know how they'd actually be getting a couple of hundred cameras out every couple of weeks in that space, not having been there. But, yeah, I'm sure they're definitely busting out of where they are.
But Las Vegas, an interesting choice, really. I mean, obviously, there's cheap land there and stuff, but I would have thought with the subprime, there's cheap land everywhere. So,
yeah, I guess so. And cheap accommodation for people visiting, cheap, there's international airport, so they can ship stuff out.
Cheap hookers, cheap everything, really.
Yeah.
And the other thing, it's going to be hard relocating in a whole company, right? Because, I mean, certainly, you know, there's a heck of a difference between living in Orange County and just outside, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah. But obviously, the guys are happy to do it. So I wonder if everyone's going to relocate or just this has been addition to the setup they have in California.
Sounds like a lot of design, engineering, manufacturing, sales, service. That sounds like everybody. That, I don't know how they do that. That's obviously going to have a lot of dedicated staff working for them who'll now be looking for new place to live.
Yeah, I mean, it may just be that this is an additional location because obviously the housing and stuff you're referring to is for talent for shoots and stuff.
Sure.
So it may be that this is just an additional thing, but who knows? Any which way you cut it, something like this isn't going to be built overnight, so it's probably going to be a while before we...
scheduled for 2010.
Yeah. Subject to change.
Subject to change. Count on it. Okay.
And now there was a winner to Open Cut, was there?
Yeah, yeah. There was a winner to Open Cut. Now, I actually downloaded it today from... Oh, what was the name of the... there's like a sort of a Vimeo kind of a server where you can download a lot of high-def clips. And I was really impressed with the footage. I actually hadn't seen any of the Open Cut 1 footage before. It's amazing looking stuff. Real congrats to the guys that shot it and to Tori and all the guys there. Yes, yeah, so Open Cut 1 was won by Karsten Kirpanik, and you can actually, I'll try and remember where I went and downloaded it, but you can definitely go and download the whole edit, and it looks outstanding. So congratulations there. And Open Cut 2 is now open for entries. Actually, going back to Open Cut 1, they had 51... They had certainly had 200 or 300 applications, but they actually had 51 edits returned and officially submitted. So they've actually filed for a Guinness Book of Records entry for the greatest number of cinematic film edits from a single set of source media.
Well, that's not going to win. That's not going to win. I've done bloody commercials when they've had more than 51 versions of the edit. What are you kidding me? 51? That's like on a good day.
That's right. I've had that many
cut, producers cut, directors.
That's
other
right.
Cut.
I've had that many people on set give me their opinion.
Yeah, there you go. God, this guy's insane. Okay.
So theoretically, stand by for a potential Guinness World Record there. So and so the next
obviously
one is
getting in the Guinness Book of Records is something you can be really proud of. Right up there with how many hot dogs you can stuff in your mouth.
It is on my life. I told Tori, it's on my life to do list to be in the Guinness Book of Records for something.
Yeah.
I don't know, balancing a brick on your head for 5 days or something. I don't know what it is, but
Emmy nomination, tick. Oscar nomination, tick. Most number of bricks stuffed in my mouth while hot dogs are on my head, tick. Yeah, anyway.
Well, it's life to do. I haven't worked out what it is yet, but I'll get there. I'll let you know. So Open Cut 2 is open for entries. You're basically cutting, it's a TVC this time, you're cutting a 30 to 60 second TVC from ski footage, which they've all shot at Alpine Meadows, which is a ski resort near to, I think it's near to where Tori's base is.
Now, while Open Cut's really cool, let's swing our attention back to some of the new accessories and gear and stuff. And there are actually a couple of cool things that that you've managed to track down for us this week.
Yes, when I was talking last episode to Action Products, found a really nice little, cool little, very simple little drive mount. Basically, it's a little bracket to slot into one side of your red drive, and it screws onto the mounts onto the rods. Very, very simple. It's called a Raid Rack. It's about $148. Yeah, go to Action Products and you can order it. I've got pictures here on the show notes. It's a very simple, nice little...
I really want one of these.
Beautifully made little thing. It's very cool. I really like it.
Yeah. I find that battery pack and drive holder that you get from Red to be the number one thing that gets replaced by people on their Reds.
But when you think about I don't quite know what the solutions are, but there's lots of solutions for getting the batteries out of the way, lots of solutions for getting the drives out of the way, but I don't think anyone's quite cracked the new version of the Red unit yet. I think essentially the design is kind of right, but it's ripe for improvement, I think. But this is a good little step here, this Raid Rack. That's worth having a look at. It's fantastic. Now, the next thing, I've sort of covered this another one of these before, but this one looks really a little bit simpler and a lot neater as well. This is a wireless HD video transmitter. So this one, I think, is a little bit cheaper than the one I reviewed a few episodes ago. This is by IDX, who make a lot of VLOC batteries and all that sort of power. So basically, this will sort of stack on at the back of your... if you're Red, between the battery plate, basically you don't even, the only cable you need is the SDI in. You just take the battery off and stack this on with the V-blocks, and it essentially is meant to be bulletproof, fantastic HD transmission of...
This looks like a fabulous design. Really fabulous design.
Really well thought out. Looks pretty bulletproof. Looks very sort of on-set ready, and theoretically you get transmitter and receiver for $5,800.
Do you have any idea how far it'll transmit?
No, but the guys, I've got a couple of links to the show notes. Guys, if you're going to definitely get the show notes, because we spend a little bit of time gathering all these pictures and links and things, and it's real worthwhile to, if you can, providing you're not driving at the time, to download and play along at home. But there's also a link to a review which seemed to be really good, that they were shooting outside in the street and they were inside the rental facility, 75 meters away inside the building, getting rock solid pictures. So it was I've yet to sort of hear of anyone who's done some real on set sort of testing of it. But anything that doesn't break up within 5 meters of from the monitor is okay by me, and I think that's a pretty good price.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm keen to have a play with that. So now, if we don't have anything else, we should now switch gears to your interview this week, which is with Michael Scott. And for those people that don't know, Michael became famous, I guess, on the internet as a celebrity for doing the Ryan versus the Dorkman, which was basically one of the best Star Wars lightsaber fights you've ever seen. They did then Ryan versus the Dorkman 2, which took it to another level, and they started like cutting arms off and stuff. But these aren't guys with rubber ears stuck on their heads and dressing up like Obi-Wan Kenobi. They basically do the fight just in like a normal industrial kind of factory or something. And this was actually a couple of years ago, so it's a little rough to... If you look at the video, they look a kind of bit young, but that's because this was, as I say, shot a few years ago. And then they most recently were in the Pork and Beans music video that was done... I don't know if you saw that one, but they had like all the internet, basically, celebrities.
I did see that. I didn't realise. Of course they were in that.
And not only were they in that, but they decided, or they volunteered, to do their own compositing.
That's true, that's right. That they did, that's right. You're doing something with these guys coming up soon.
Oh, actually, Michael works with us in FXPHD. He's doing an indie filmmaking course with us at FXPHD. And awesome. But you spoke to Michael presumably via Skype earlier in the week.
Yep. And here it is. Okay, I'm talking to LA-based indie filmmaker Michael Scott.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent, thank you. Thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, I'm happy to.
Who's best known, of course, as being Dorkman in the fantastic Star Wars-related films Ryan vs. Dorkman and Ryan vs. Dorkman 2, which are just awesome, by the way. I'm sure you've got a couple of other million people telling you that.
Thank you so much. Well, it kind of never gets old, though. It's always good to hear that that people enjoy it.
It's turned into a bit of a cottage industry for you now, actually.
A little bit. Well, it's the kind of thing where it's like, man, if you know, we've got almost 4 million views on YouTube. It's like, man, if every one of them had paid a dollar, you know.
So, and now obviously you've got DVDs of the making ofs and remastered DVDs of both films. So, yeah,
Yes, that's true. Yes. Yeah.
It's pretty impressive. So, obviously, that was the second film was a couple of years ago. Yes. Since then, you have bought a Red.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So, what number Red did you buy, and what made you buy it?
Well, we got number 1028. I got in just before they closed that first round of reservations. I'm a little disappointed it couldn't have been 1024 or another cool number, but or you know, not cool, sure. But at least, you know. you know what I mean. And it was you know, I waited till the very last day cuz like I was thinking about whether or not I should, and ultimately it's like this is the camera that I always wanted. Since I got into filmmaking, at least, because, you know, you look at all the digital cameras out there and all the DV and stuff like that, which is great. You know, the DV revolution and everything is a phenomenal thing. And, you know, I wouldn't be here talking about any of this if not for, you know, the Canon GO1 and all that stuff. So, you know, not to say that it's awful, but there are so many things that separated it from, you know, from film and stuff like that, and you know, you look at the specs of a camera and you look at what's missing and you go, why can't someone just do this, why can't someone make this? And then I heard about the Red, and it was pretty much all the things that I was saying, why isn't someone making this camera? So after it, you know, looking at it, it's like, well, you know, I want to take the next step, and it looks like the Red is the camera I want, so it's time to take the next step. And so I put down my money.
So now you've got it. What is the next step?
Well, the next step is hopefully to start working in features. I mean, we've done shorts and we're still doing shorts, putting them out on YouTube, and that's great. But since Ryan vs. Dorkman and Ryan vs. Dorkman 2, we've had a lot of people interested in working with us. So we're talking with various people right now. The first item on the slate is looking like it's going to be a feature film with Dark Horse Entertainment called The Descendants, starring Ray Park.
Fantastic.
And that's probably the first feature that we're going to be shooting on the Red. It's really exciting. I just turned in a script that pretty much everyone's happy with. I haven't heard back from Ray, but I should in the next couple of days. But a lot of companies want to try out like digital distribution, so it may not be a theatrical feature. It may be distributed in some weird new way. I don't know. We'll see. But it will be feature length, at least.
Right. So you don't quite have George Lucas on speed dial yet.
Not yet. No. But you know, it's yeah, not yet.
Okay, so what other gear did you get with the Red when you got it?
Well, I got like pretty much everything that they sell, because I'm like, you know what, because I had to get a loan for it, right? So it's like, well, if I'm gonna put up everything I own as collateral, then I might as well get a big loan, you know. So I got pretty much everything. I just got the EVF yesterday, actually.
Great.
So I've got that. I've got the LCD. You know, I got an O'Connor head and sticks, all the grip stuff. I'm really loving Element Technica's stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the breakout box is great, and I'm so excited about the about their handheld rig.
Yeah, that's looking fantastic.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, I do a lot of stuff, because you can't really hold the camera in your hand, like, you know, we shot the other stuff with like the HVX or whatever. There's small cameras we can kind of run around holding them in our hand at like waist level, but like the Red, you have to kind of hug like an you know, you're holding a like a medium-sized dog, basically. It's really it's heavy and it's awkward, and it's difficult to get like, you know, shoot from the hip stuff. Like a lot of it ends up having to be on your shoulder.
Yeah.
And the shoulder dovetail is just not okay. Like, yeah. It gets the job done, but I'm really looking forward to never having to use that again.
So what have you shot with it so far?
Well, so far we shot a the first weekend we had it, we shot a little martial arts fight scene, which I've posted up on YouTube. It's called Kung Fu Red, and it was like a like a 2-minute fight scene, just a little thing. It was actually because, you know, I shoot a lot of fight scenes and I really enjoy shooting fight scenes. So to test out the camera and, you know, pulling focus and stuff like that, which we've never really had to do before. I wanted to do something like that. So my friend Anthony choreographed a scene and we shot it. And we cut it together, and it's like, oh, this is really good. We should actually finish this and put it out somewhere. So we did. And then I actually shot a 48-hour film with it. I entered the 48-hour film festival in Los Angeles, and I shot a film with The Red on that, which was really interesting. I mean, you know, going in, it's like, because a lot of people, you know, it was a month ago, and so much has changed in the last month even. But, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, the workflow's not ready, and, you know, it's time-consuming and yada, yada. And it's like, well, we'll see, you know. I mean, why? We could have shot it on the HVX, but it's like, why own a Red if we're not going to shoot stuff on it? So,
yeah.
So we shot our film festival entry on that.
So how did that go? And is it posted anywhere?
It's not posted yet, because after we finished it, we came up with a better opening scene, because you got to write and do the whole thing within the 48 hours, right?
Sure.
And so we came up with a better opening scene. So it's like, and we really, otherwise it turned out really well. So we're like, wow, you know, this is, aside from the opening scene, this is a project that we can finish, like polish it and not have to make excuses for the fact that it was a 48-hour film, you know? So we're going to do that, and then we'll put the final version up. And then after that, we'll probably put up the 48-hour version just to compare, you know. But we don't want the 48-hour version to be the first impression, necessarily.
Great. Well, that's great, even with the time constraints, that you could still come out with something at the other end that you're really happy with.
Oh, yeah. We're really happy with it, which surprised me, because I thought it was going to be awful. You know, and
I love those 48-hour competitions. They really intrigue me. I think it's fantastic sort of... Quick game is a good game.
Right, exactly. And it's great to be kind of, you know, to kind of get out there and just do something. Because a lot of times you get caught up, or I do. It doesn't sound like you do. You sound like you keep pretty busy. But a lot of times I get caught up in trying to, you know, plan and get everything perfect ahead of time. And sometimes it's like, you know what, let's just jump in and do something.
Yeah, but I'm caught up doing the stuff I have to do. You're out there doing the stuff you want to do.
Fair enough. as for using the Red, it was actually great. I was cutting from the proxies, and then at first I was going to do a crimson a round trip, and I did, like, we cut one scene and then we did a round trip because we were going to do a 1080p master of it, and we had some visual effects to do and stuff like that, but mostly monitor burns. You know, I looked at what we had to turn in, and our time was kind of running out. And I was like, well, this is kind of stupid, because it's only they only want it delivered in SD.
Right.
And we're cutting from the 1K proxies, and doing a 1080p round trip and all the rendering and stuff is kind of retarded. So so I wound up just doing a direct ProRes transcode from the 1K proxies.
Yeah.
And finishing on that. But the final version, again, we are actually going to do the 1080p master and all of that, now that we no longer have a time constraint. But, I mean, it worked great. I mean, we had some green screen in the ProRes. It looked fine because, I mean, it was green screen for, you know, a virtual set of someone on a monitor.
Right.
So that, you know, that the edges were fine and stuff like that. It worked great. I was really happy with it.
You certainly set yourself some challenges for a 48-hour turnaround.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Virtual sets and green screens.
Yeah. Which I think we could have done. I mean, Ryan I've been working with Ryan for 6-7 years now, and he still just astonishes me, the things he can do. I mean, we finished shooting. I mean, you shoot from like Friday night and you turn it in Sunday night, right?
Right.
And we didn't finish shooting until like 3 a.m. on Saturday. On Sunday, 3 a.m. Sunday. We didn't have a cut until about 10 a.m. Sunday. And he created a virtual set, and he did like most of the burns and stuff like that. We ran out of time because there were some production snags, but I mean, he, like, I was just astonished at how well things were turning out, considering how quickly he was cranking them out.
Well, so yeah, let's go across that. Who does what?
It depends on the project. Yeah, because there's me and Ryan, and we've just teamed up with a couple of other filmmakers who I've really admired for a while. A guy named Skeeter Jones and a guy named Anthony Alba, who you can also be found on YouTube. You know, they do fight scenes. Anthony's a fight scene choreographer, great stuff. So it's the kind of thing where we can all kind of do, we can all kind of do everything, but there are certain things that one or the other of us is best at, you know? So it's like, if we want a fight scene, you know, Ryan and I have done fight scenes and stuff like that, but we'll probably defer to Anthony to get us some really good stuff. If we're doing visual effects, you know, I've been doing visual effects for a long time, but Ryan has won an Emmy for his visual effects and is nominated for a second one, actually, this year.
Fantastic.
For his work on Heroes. Usually if I can give him the visual effects to do, I will, because he'll probably do a better job of it than I will, because he's, you know, that's what he does.
Yeah.
And he's really got a mind for it. Whereas I can get the job done, and I do get the job done if necessary, because we can't afford to hire more people. But if at all possible, I prefer to defer to him when it comes to that.
Right. Oh, well, it sounds like you've got a great relationship going.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a great relationship with all the people I work with. I'm very fortunate in that sense to be able to just continue working with the same people and just continue building from there.
So when you're not doing a film in 48 hours, what is your preferred post path?
The preferred post path, I haven't been able to play with, you know, it's the kind of thing where I keep doing it kind of differently depending on the project. But I seem to, so far I've enjoyed the most cutting the proxies, doing a crimson round trip, generally not higher than 1080p, because when are you gonna, you know,
yeah.
I'm not gonna show it on anything higher than like Vimeo, and that's 720p.
Yeah.
So but it's good to have a 1080p master for, yeah, I guess Blu-ray still, someday.
Still shooting 4K.
Yeah, oh of course. Yeah,
yeah,
still
course.
Shooting 4K, because
yeah,
because why get a Red if you're
exactly
not gonna shoot 4K?
Exactly.
Yeah, so we shoot 4K generally to the drives. It's good, we have a bunch of cards, but it's like the drives get us the most amount of time, and we haven't yet done anything that really shakes the drive too much. So we haven't had any trouble with it. No dropouts, no nothing like that. And then just straight up transfer it over. I've done some experimenting with, you know, I've got like a droplet that can transcode it to 720 to cut quicker and stuff like that. But I mean, the transcode time takes so long. It's like, I don't think I'm saving any time this way. And the stuff I do is mostly straight cuts. So it's, I don't take a big hit in terms of the real time editing. Working with the proxies. I suppose,
sure,
if I was planning to do something with a lot of dissolves or picture-in-picture or anything crazy like that, I might work with the I might do a transcode first. But so far, the proxy workflow has been great.
So are you going to stick with the Red one or swap it over for an Epic?
Well, it depends on if I can get that extra 20,000 next year. But my goal is to get an Epic. I love the Red one. I'm, you know, like I said, I'm so happy with everything about it, and it's more than any camera I've ever had. But the Epic is, you know, you look at the specs and it's like, wow, this really is everything that was kind of missing from the Red one, and I didn't even realize I missed it. Well,
yeah.
I know some people realize they missed it, but I didn't until I saw it on the Epic spec sheet.
Yeah.
So I'll probably go with that. Mainly the higher frame rates.
Exactly.
Are what I'm after. I mean, 5K, great, and all that other stuff, but you know, it's the frame rates that are the one thing that I do miss with the Red one, because I don't, you know, I wouldn't want to have to switch to 16mm every time I wanted to do slow-mo on a film shoot.
Exactly.
So I don't want to switch to 4K to do slow-mo on Red, or to 2K, I mean.
And the Epic is smaller and lighter, so for you...
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's the other thing. I'm like, wow, a 40% reduction in weight. I'm so there. Yeah, so it's all exciting. I'm hoping I'll be able to afford the Epic once it comes out.
Well, hopefully once this feature gets rolling, you'll be able to.
I hope so. I got my fingers crossed.
Ray Park, for those that don't know, is who played Darth Maul in episode 1.
Yes.
So that's a great snag to get him involved.
Oh, he's great. He's great. I mean, he's an amazing guy to work with. I mean, you'd think, he was Darth Maul and he was Toad and he's worked in a bunch of big films. But he's got no ego at all. It's so great. He just comes to, because last year we shot a proof of concept like teaser for it. And this was before we had a script and before the Red and all of that. So it's like shot on the HVX and it kind of doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's got some cool visuals and stuff in it. And he was there, we shot at night really late. He was there and he was totally involved with it. And it's just so great to work with people like that who just want to be working and are engaged in what you're doing, as opposed to just showing up, reading the lines and leaving. He gets there and he goes, oh, what if I did this? Because, I think it would work for the character because of this. Like, he's always thinking about that stuff. It's really great.
Fantastic. Well, that sounds like a great project. So yeah. Anything else in the pipeline?
I'm actually working on probably the last fan film that I'm going to be doing until RVD3, it's one called Sand Dreamer Rising. It should be out by the end of next year. I did not direct this one, but I was involved in the shooting of it, and now I'm supervising the visual effects. And I told them that I would mention it if I got the opportunity, so here it is. that's going to be a really interesting one. And besides that, I might actually get like a day job working at an effects company, because I know all these people who work there and could possibly help me out. But right now, the main thing is just trying to get Descendants rolling, especially before the strike hits.
All right. Well, look, thanks for your taking time today. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I was happy to do it. I love the show, so I was glad to be able to contribute and be a part of it.
Thank you. So where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I do have a Twitter account at I'm Dorkman Scott on there. Basically anywhere. If there's someone named Dorkman Scott there, it's probably me. Same with YouTube, same with Vimeo. Same with Skype. I don't have a website yet. I have registered dorkmanscott.com, but I haven't put anything up there yet. But I'm working on that. And I've got a blog, dorkmanscott.blogspot.com, that I post to like between several times a week and several times a month, depending on how busy I am.
Well, hey, you've got your own wiki page. They can go there.
Oh, yeah. I'm on Wikipedia.
And there's RyanVersusDorkman.com, where you can get all the downloads and purchase DVDs and making of DVDs, which is fantastic.
Yes, thank you. Wow, you're better at this than I am. I think that covers everything. We're going to be, hopefully, we do rent out the Red to people in L.A. We do rent out the Red, and we've got pretty good rates, and we know what we're doing with it. So we were gonna put up a website, but we haven't got it up yet. We're probably going to get it up in the next couple weeks.
Well, there's plenty of ways for people to reach you if they want to rent a Red.
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. And again, thanks for your time.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Actually, it's funny, they did that Kung Fu video, and they recorded some really great sounds. I just happened to have had some Kung Fu stuff that I shot in China. So I actually asked Michael, and he gave me all the audio files of their sort of, which we used.
Yes, I saw the edit of that. It looked great. The sound effects, you sort of really got to have them. Kung Fu without, just doesn't work.
Yeah, we've discovered a really good karate chop sound is to get a whole lot of like a cabbage, kind of wet cabbage, and drop it on a marble bench top. Gives just the right kind of sort of cracking, squelching, thumping sound. But anyway, I digress.
Doing your own Foley.
One of the things that I've done since I spoke to you last, Jason, is we did a shoot at a location in Sydney, which was a daylight and night shoot, and the was shot by Ben Allen, and it was on the Red. And I wanted to discuss, if I could, LUTs and onset monitoring, because we were discussing it a little bit before the interview there with the HD feed from the camera, but we haven't really discussed what's coming out of the cameras, and that's pretty significant in Build 16. So I guess, what do you do for commercials? What are you monitoring on set when you're working?
We have it's a little bit fiddly. It's probably the most fiddly bit, I suppose, about it. Probably have the SDI out going straight to an onboard, either the Red LCDs or sometimes the sort of a third-party
onboard LCDs, and I'll usually sort of direct and watch off that because I kind of like to direct, you know, pretty much near the camera. Then we'll generally run out to Video Village. At the moment, most people seem to be using those 17-inch Panasonic, I think they are, LCDs, which are really nice. And then seem to be also, obviously, for recording and playback, unfortunately, then seem to, every time you want to play back a take, seem to be bumping down to standard def to be able to record on a little HD clamshell or something. So basically, any recording, any playback of material is SD, and just when you're watching live, we're watching straight off SDI on those monitors. But so, which obviously means there's a separate down converters always hanging around and power supplies for all that, so it makes it a little bit fiddly for if you're doing a bit of run and gun. So yeah, it's a little bit kludgy, I suppose.
Now, are you still viewing that though in Rec 709 color space?
No idea.
Okay, so let's assume for a second that you are, because that would be the standard output that would come outside of the Red camera. So what you're talking about is what resolution I'm looking at it at, because you're getting this HD signal, which kind of looks like normal video, and you're down-resing it. And that's a completely normal workflow for commercials. And I'm not surprised you haven't gone much beyond that, because I don't know many people in commercials that are. Having said that, there's for feature film workflow, for when you've got a 6-week shoot, there's the ability to get more in-depth in how you're actually viewing the material. Let me give you a few options, as I did to Ben Allen on set. And in fact, we actually do a class on this in PhD, where we go into this, obviously, in excruciating detail. But it's the serious pointy end of the stuff that we do, right? Obviously, you can do the straight viewing that you're talking about. But for those people that are listening that are into feature film pipelines, you'd obviously appreciate the flexibility of being able to give someone like you, Jason, on set a different set of lookup tables. Now, let me discuss it just from a film point of
view. That's
right.
And Ryan Kunkelman touched on this a little bit when he was talking about doing DIT and on-set grading and stuff for the Knowing interview we did a couple of eps back.
Exactly. So let's, and in fact, this has changed since the Knowing, because we had one of the guys from the Knowing on set. And so I covered that also when we were talking in our class about it. But it's changed because they didn't have Build 16, and it's changed with Build 16. Now Build 16 is released. I think this is going to be adopted. But let's discuss it now in terms of state of the art for a feature film pipeline using 35mm film for a second, or maybe a Genesis camera or something, right? So what's going to happen on set is that you want to basically be able to set up a look. And so what you want to get is a signal on set, either it be at dailies back or a video feed from something like a Genesis that isn't red, and you're going to want to apply a look to that. And in fact, what some people are using, which I think is really interesting, and we'll be looking into this more in future episodes, is the density and gamma stuff. And so they would apply up to 10 parameter changes to that image, and that would be encapsulated in a EDL, which is, or actually it's a CDL, it's a color decision list, but it's the ACS's color decision list. So it's the ACS CDL, kind of a mouthful, but there you go.
Okay.
And that's a set of parameters that you can tweak on set on a calibrated setup. And that then goes with the footage back to, say, your 2K. And your 2K DaVinci, you would load that CDL up, and you would now apply a trim to that as you did dailies. And when you do a trim to that, you've basically now got a color layer on top of the on-set tweaks, and that's what's going out to Avid. But what's nice is you haven't affected the underlying imagery, because it's just a look placed on top.
Sure.
And then what you can do is, when you go into the Resolve, you can load up the list that you got from your 2K, so you actually have both what they saw on set, what you saw in Avid, and then the original material if you want to start all over.
So how do you set up this original? How do you set up the look to begin with?
So in the film scenario, or in the Genesis scenario, this is what Density and Gamma do. They provide a application that runs, and as long as you're only tweaking the parameters that are supported inside the ACS CDL, that just gets translated down the line, and it's a data flow. Now, that makes sense for those setups, but when you move to Red, you have a whole new level of flexibility, because we can now control what's coming out of the video split, because what's coming out to the video split is actually affected by the metadata looks in the camera.
Awesome.
So, in other words, now, this is where it gets kind of tricky, and I'm going to give you multiple options, because there is no one perfect solution. But one thing you can do, and certainly we do this, is we go into Scratch and actually grade a look on some test material and export that as a LUT. And then we take that LUT on set and we feed the LUT into a CineTel monitor, but you could also do it with a Lutheran LUT box. So what happens now is the video split comes out the side of the camera and it goes into this box and a LUT is applied to it. And then you get to see what you set in the color grading suite, in this case in Scratch. And right. So you say, well, that looks good. That's what I remember. That's look number one. And to be honest, most DOPs would set up a dozen, maybe more looks, but probably only use one or two on set. So, for example, there was a feature I was talking to you recently. They had the before bloody face, after bloody face, and epilogue kind of looks. And so when they're on set, they'd say, give me the before bloody face look on this shot and the after and whatever. And they would just flip between those three, but they would, on any one day, resign themselves to a look. But it was only a look being sort of applied in the monitor. So there's nothing actually happening to the data, and you can switch it on or off with a hit of a button.
Okay. So is there other ways to set the looks other than going through Scratch and doing it on a proper grading time? Is there something that you can set on a laptop, say you've set up you had a 1 week short film or movie of the week or something, and you really didn't have time to sort of bust out of the on-set environment? Can you actually sort of set this look any other way?
You absolutely can. Now, the promise is that we would be able to set a look in our laptops and take that out on a memory stick and stick it in our camera and just have that look applied on set. And in fact, we were hacking that before. Now, that doesn't yet work properly. And the reason is quite simple. You can save looks to that memory card, which is not the CF card. It's a little memory stick. And you can load those, having saved them. But what you can't do is generate them on the laptop. Because neither Scratch or Red Cine is exporting that file that you can then wander over to the camera and plug into. Having said that, with the menu changes on the Red now, it is actually possible to punch up a look. Let's say I was sitting beside you. You and I work out a look in Red Alert, and even this includes actually doing the curves, which most people imagine that it doesn't include, but it totally does. We can adjust the curves. Then we literally hand write down the values that you've set for that look, and we can go over to the back of the camera and punch all of those values in. And so you can make a look, and we can then replicate that exactly in the camera. We've tested all this, and it works. Now, it is fiddly to do that, but don't forget, you're only doing this like once or twice, saving it, and that's used for the whole shoot. So, yes, it's a pain in the butt, but you personally aren't going to be there, nor is it going to shut down the production while you do it, because you'd have done it in pre or whenever.
And you're really only sort of affecting a few parameters, as you say.
Yeah, you're affecting enough parameters to get the look you want, knowing, of course, that what we're doing is only affecting the metadata coming out. Now, this is where it's kind of interesting, I think, and certainly something I talked with Ben Allen about. Because if you think about it from the first scenario, we're applying a look at the video split in the tent where you're sitting, Jace, but that's not affecting the LCD on the camera, and it's not affecting what's coming out of the viewfinder. In the second model, it is. In the second model, we punch up stuff on the camera and select a look, save it, and then reload it. And yes, the video split is doing that, and you're seeing it in the tent, but also the DOP and the focus puller are seeing it on their LCD and on the color viewfinder. And so that's if you like, kind of model two. Now, model three is even kind of more complex, which is that that's all based on the output of the camera is the thing that we tweaked, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So you did a test. We took it into Red Alert or into Scratch, tweaked it in both cases. But what can come out of the camera can change. So it's actually possible to get red space coming out of the camera. Now, if red space comes out of the camera, then we can be doing a whole different level of stuff, because the look you may apply in that first model in terms of a LUT is based on being in an HD video Rec. 709 color space, which for a commercial, not a problem. If I'm doing a feature film, I may not want to be in Rec. 709. I just may have a pipeline that is not conducive to starting at a Rec. 709 color space. And so I can actually get a different color space coming out of the camera, hence apply a whole different set of applications to it, or LUTs. And these can be, you know, as complex as you like. I mean, a CineTel monitor can load a 3D LUT or a 1D LUT. So I know you know this, Jason, but for those that don't know, the difference between a 1D LUT and a 3D LUT, a 1D LUT literally just, the red only affects the red, the blue, the green, the green. And it tends to be a monitor calibration level control.
Right.
A 3D LUT is actually profiling. So while this 1D LUT is used for calibration, a 3D LUT, because adjusting the red would, say, adjust a little bit of the red and a tad of green and a tad of blue because it's a complicated three-dimensional matrix. That is actually a profiling tool and allows you to say, what would this look like if I was projecting this footage that we're shooting today on Premiere stock in a cinema? And I can profile that look and then apply it. So quite complicated.
Okay, so now what would, I suppose, what would be the plan if I say, look, if it was a two-day commercial and I just wanted to, cool, today I want to make everything that Video Village sees look like it's bleach bypass or look like, you know, an interesting, a look that's sort of outside of, you know, contrast and gamma.
So given that it's you and you're obviously very technically literate and quite comfortable with technology, I would simply show you what parameters we're talking about in Red Alert and let you play with it until you got something that you liked. Now, clearly, yep. You may not be the sort of director that wants to do that. You might want to sit beside someone like me that tweaks all those things, and that's fine. But either model, you just get something, you say, well, that looks kind of nice. Let's look at that on a couple of different shots. Yeah, I'm happy with that. And then you would, before the shoot started, walk over to the camera and enter those numbers. Now, we're talking about entering numbers, but we're not talking about entering hundreds of them. We're talking about entering maybe a dozen numbers. And as long as your DIT or camera department knows the camera menus pretty well, that's a relatively easy thing to do. I would then output a shot back out, do a reality check that what we're getting out of the camera looks like what we had on the Red Alert in the first place. So you obviously haven't made a mistake. And then that would just be a look that you would see for the next 2 days, or it would be the bleach bypass look. But at any time, you could, at the back of the camera, punch up to remove that, turn it off, and you'd be back to seeing what is actually going out in terms of a standard look or the raw files with just a simple Rec. 709 kind of look on it.
Gotcha. So there's no sort of workaround of being able to actually load any looks from, or maybe this is stage 4 or 5, but to be able to, obviously, once you've got a great look in Red Cine or whatever, to be able to put it onto the SD card or whatever and put that back into
and
the camera.
We totally expected that. We totally expected that for Build 16. It hasn't just happened. We're like a mil off that. So, you know, this last manual stage of re-entering the numbers is a pain in the butt, but it's completely doable. And that will go away. Yes, you'll be able to save out. But the moment you cannot save out from Red Alert the correct file format to then take into your little memory card and stick it in the camera and load from it. All you can do is save to that memory card, reload from that memory card. You could interchange it between cameras, but you can't, you know.
Because one of the, I suppose, for the future, one of the a fantastic tool would be, you know, some setup that the DOP can use. Because at the moment, I've got, you know, a lot of my guys, regardless of whether we're shooting film or digital, would, you know, take their digital SLR, take a few shots, you know, beside the camera, take it over to their laptop, put it into Photoshop and play around with it and say, this is a cool look, what do you like? And that'd be fantastic. They would then save those and actually email them to the grader and say, look, we like this look and we've sort of kind of lit it to suit that. Can you please make sure when we do rushes, you know, give it a little tweak to sort of steer it in this way? Or if he's not available for the actual proper grade, you know, that would be a great little tool for so that I don't have to explain it to him.
So to tie in with what we were talking about earlier with the SDK, that's exactly the sort of thing that some enterprising 3D guy / programmer could do. They could write a plugin.
Enterprising 3D programmer.
You could write a plugin for Photoshop. And that plugin would let you control values. So you'd have to limit yourself to only using these controls in Photoshop, right? Because obviously Photoshop can do things there's no way you can do in a camera, right?
Yeah,
let's start with mats, right?
Okay. Yes.
But let's say you'd be in Photoshop. You say, well, here's a bunch of buttons that I can play with, and I can adjust the look. And when I'm happy with that, I can export that out in a file format that I can then load to the camera directly or via one of the other apps. The thing is, though, once you do that, then the question comes, well, why bother doing it in Photoshop? Because if I can't use all the Photoshop tools, what advantage is there being in Photoshop? And I guess the only thing is that it's probably a more familiar environment for people to work in. We're a long way off doing a general Photoshop grade, hitting the export button and being able to load that in the camera. I mean, it may happen. Adobe may blow my mind and do that, but that would be a big ask.
Well,
I know that like Panavision and those guys have got, there's a few sort of tools out there for sort of doing these sort of show and tell looks, and this is what my film might look like if I had this filter on it, and that sort of bleach bypass technique, and if it was spun this way in the color. So there's a lot of sort of preview kind of software out there that'll let you sort of do that stuff, but obviously it's not nothing to do with LUTs, and it's purely more for just looking at what is possible in the film world, I guess. So it doesn't need to be Photoshop. It doesn't matter. It'd just be great if you got this fantastic pull down menu of, you know, 30 or 50 sort of interesting presets that then you could sort of slightly change and call it your own, and save it to keep for next time and apply that look on set. It's one of those kind of cool Video Village kind of ooh moments where advertising bods go, yeah, we like this red thing.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest, I think that Red World is shaping up to turn into exactly the analogy of the stills world. There are people going to shoot JPEG, people that shoot RAW. So people are going to grab the red, shoot Rec 709, just be happy with it. It looks good, great picture, thanks for playing, walk away. And then there are going to be those that shoot effectively the equivalent of RAW, which is to say they do shoot, expect to play with those RAW files, expect to be clever with it, and can get amazing results out of it, and they'll be the pros. And quickly the market will sort of, you know, maybe not quickly, but over time the market will separate down to those that are the kind of high-end, hardcore Red users, and then the ones that are just happy to plug and play. And when Scarlett comes out, that'll be particularly the case.
Yeah, well, look, it'll be the guys, it'll be the DPs and the editors that can adapt to this kind of stuff. That'll be the ones that have the leap on everybody else. And when it does sort of all start to go fairly ballistic, as I say, I'm about to do three jobs in a row, not of my own. This one of them is my own choice to go red. The other two, the red decision has come from client or agency. So it's actually starting to be not just sort of geeky directors or DPs that are suggesting this stuff. It is slowly starting to, the decision to shoot with this system is actually starting to come from other unexpected places.
Yeah, no, so that sounds really interesting. In fact, I was talking at an event here in Chicago that was at Hootenanny, which is a leading post house here in Chicago, and that was helped by the guys at Fletcher. Now, Fletcher is a rental house, a bit like we're used to in Sydney, and they have multiple reds. And that was a talk that I was giving pretty much just to the advertising community. And as you know, Chicago has a superb advertising reputation.
Awesome.
So it's pretty intimidating, these senior guys from major brands. And I was trying to explain to them red workflow, but a really informed group. They're obviously very keen to learn. And that's, I think, is sort of, I don't know, typical of the mood or sea change of people going over to saying, well, I should learn about this now because I think it's probably stable enough to start incorporating in our major campaigns.
I've just this week been in meetings between myself and agency and clients, and I don't bring it up, but the agency will actually be the ones saying, now of course we are shooting on this fabulous new, they'll get all the terminology completely wrong and all that sort of stuff, but it doesn't matter,
the new blue camera,
that's right, the new blue camera, it's very innovative, and it's the next hot, and the clients just go, oh wow, cool, fantastic. So
you know, there's nothing like it, like the split on set. You know, if you're doing a product shot, you got a, you know, 1920 by 1080 or even 720p video split of that product shot. I mean, they can really...
Look, I mean, the worry, I remember when video splits went from black and white to colour on set, that everyone said, oh, God, colour splits, don't bring them in. The client's going to be going, oh, my pack doesn't look red enough, or it doesn't look, you know, the colours are all wrong. And I really thought that when everything started to move to this sort of super high-def monitoring, and we're all going to start, everyone, you know, clients are going to start seeing their pack shot in 4K, that we're going to be into a world of hurt, where they're constantly tweaking every little tiny wrinkle and hair on everything. But actually, it's gone the other way. They've actually sort of really like, it's another extra sort of little wow factor for them, and it's, you know, it's actually working for us rather than against us, I think.
It's less of a leap of faith. It's less of a leap of faith that it's going to look good on the day, because they can see it looks good when they're standing there at the studio.
Yes, exactly. You don't have to sit there going, now, you know, of course it's not, you know, it'll look better than this. But,
it won't have these lines on it and this, like, crosshair in the middle.
Can we paint that out later?
Yeah. Hey, I've got an amazing week coming up next week, just to do a bit of a plug on FX Guide. FX Guide TV, this week has an amazing interview with Paul Dubevic, who's a phenomenal researcher. And I'd recommend that to anyone who wants to geek out, because it's really interesting about how they're doing facial work. And probably, I'm going to say this is the landmark point, the year that we actually produce stuff. And I can't talk about some of the stuff that's going to come out next week, because I'm under NDA on that. But next week, in SIDGRAPH, we've got a whole lot of material that we can't talk about now that we'll be rolling out into FX Guide TV. And that'll be a bunch of eps coming out during the week from SIDGRAPH with some huge names that have agreed to meet up with us, and also some astonishing research. So if you're into state of the art in what's going on in the industry, and also to a certain extent, if you want to know what you'll be playing with in a year or two's time, it doesn't come out of nowhere. It comes out of this kind of stuff. Like literally, if you see it at SIDGRAPH, 18 months later you start seeing it in features, and 6 months after that you start seeing it in commercials. I mean, almost to the minute, that's what's going to happen. Yeah. So if you want to see the state of the art, that's where it's happening, and we're going to have two crews shooting at SIDGRAPH, and it'll be really big, and all of that will be on FX Guide TV from FX Guide.
And you'll be doing the occasional little 140 character reports?
I will be twittering. I'm actually going to be, twittering like a mad banshee, because that's what we did at NAB and people seem to like it. So as we go into interviews, and I mean like the first three interviews I've got, I'm going over to Kerner Optical to talk to the explosives guys who did the blowing up in Indy 4. Then we're going over to ILM to talk to John Nolan.
Well, they did something for real in Indy 4?
Oh, yeah, totally. That
okay.
That Doomtown, I thought that was magnificent. I mean, forget the plot in Indy 4, right? I know it's The Godfather Part 3, but
the huge mushrooms and all that.
Yeah, yeah. But the Doomtown explosion with the houses being destroyed, that was miniatures done by the Kerner guys, and they're just magnificent.
Fantastic.
And we got ILM after that. We're going down to speak to New Deal, who worked on Dark Knight, and we're doing a whole lot of really cool stuff, so that's all coming out next week.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I'm off to Brisbane to shoot a baby commercial.
But you did so well.
Oh, dear. Well, we'll see. But, it's a little bit slightly different from...
You're such a sensitive New Age director.
It's a bit of a far cry from going to ILM.
you're doing it. And hats off to you for doing it. And not only that, but I just, as you know, I'm not saying this. I just love your work. I think that last one you did with the nappies was great. Terrific, beautiful looks. I mean, directing children, oh my God, you should get a medal just for turning up.
I should at least get more pay.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, thanks for joining us this week, guys, and listening to Red Center. We'll try and get another one out either next week or the end of next week, depending on how SIDGRAPH pans out, because it is pretty darn busy. But as always, if you go over to fxguide.com, there'll be the show notes in the podcast area under Red Center. Jace, do you want to give out your Twitter and my Twitter names for those who want to follow us?
Yes, twitter.com/MikeSeymour or twitter.com/Wingrove. And yes, please go down, get the show notes. And please, if you've got a suggestion for a subject you'd love us to cover, that'd be fantastic. Or if you're a Red owner who thinks you've got a bit of an interesting story, give us a buzz. I'd love to do a Red Room. And we love the feedback. Thank you, guys. It's fantastic to hear it. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, don't stop with the feedback, because we love the feedback, even if it's just posting on Twitter or whatever. It's just great to hear from you guys.
If we don't get the feedback, it's just me and Mike talking to each other. It's lovely to know that there's somebody. it's nice to know that there's somebody else out there.
Until next time, I'm going to go off and get on a plane, and you're presumably going to go to bed.
I'm off to bed.
Or is there another soccer game scheduled?
No, that's it. One was enough.
I'll talk to you later, Jace. Thanks, guys.
See you guys. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC.